And welcome to this afternoon's presentation as a part of the Family Support Conference. My name is Joseph Amadeo. I'm with Quality Services for the Autism Community, and I am pleased this afternoon to be able to introduce our speaker for this workshop, Liliana from Advocates for Children of New York, and she will be presenting on Special Education 101, ages 5 to 21, the COVID-19 edition. So without further ado, I'm pleased to introduce Liliana.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. As Joseph said, my name is Liliana Diaz-Pedrosa, and I am an attorney at Advocates for Children. And you are in a presentation about special education in New York City. So today we're going to do a brief introduction, and then we're going to talk about general back-to-school information that's not necessarily special education, but it's important to review. And then we're going to get into special education and the program adaptations document, the PAD, and how to solve problems. Now, during this time, mute yourselves, please, so that we don't have a lot of background noise. If you have questions, enter them in the chat. If you are unable to enter the questions in the chat, raise your hand. And I will have times during the presentation where I will stop and take a look and see if I can answer your questions. I hope to get to all of them. So please ask, okay? The rules are if you have a question, ask it. That's really about it. Let's see what's going on with this. There you go. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Advocates for Children, we are an independent agency and we protect the rights of all New York City students. We focus exclusively on education. Anything that has to do with education, we will try to support you as long as you're a resident of New York City and your child receives services from the New York City Department of Education. So our services include a helpline, which is a free information line that runs 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday, from 10 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. The phone number is in the slide, and I'll make sure that you get copies of this presentation later. Guides or resources, you can always go to our website, advocatesforchildren.org. These are live links. The blue letters are live links. So when you get the presentation, you'll be able to click on these links. So you can go directly to get tons and tons of resources in multiple languages, in all of the major languages in New York. So you'll see information in Chinese, you'll see information in Spanish, you'll see information in Urdu, Korean, etc. We do tons of workshops and training these days. We're doing them virtually. We're trying to stay safe and we're trying to reach as many people as possible. We also offer free legal services on issues around education to families who are under a certain income. The first step is always to call our helpline because we want you to be self-advocates and get the information that you need, get the answers that you need from the get-go, and then make decisions based on that. So please feel free to reach us. That's what we're here for. All right. So far, so good? Great. So I'm going to go over some general resources.
Let me call you back.
All right. I'm going to go over some general resources that are available right now during the health crisis that we're experiencing. So please remember that there are free meals available for all students, not only for students who are eligible for free or reduced meals, but for every student on remote learning days. So while in school, you should be able to get meals for free, but also there are takeout locations. And there is a link here that will take you to the takeout locations for the days when a child is on remote learning days. Pickup is from 9 to 12. No ID or registration required. You just show up and pick up your food. For the rest of the community, meals are available for New York City residents on school days. You can pick up from 3 to 5 p.m. on school days. You don't need ID or registration. And the locations are in the link that's also in here. But if you're having a hard time later accessing the link, I'm happy to help find that information for you. Devices and technology. If you do not have a New York City Department of Education iPad to access your remote learning, this is not assistive technology. This is basic your iPad to access remote learning lessons. you're entitled to make a request and you can still continue making these requests. I had heard before that people thought it was one iPad per family. That is not so. It is one iPad per child. So if you're sharing an iPad, if your iPad is not working, if you need tech support, if you do not have a data plan, your internet is choppy, or you have difficulty accessing, even though you have the iPad, these are the links to contact, to request the iPad and to get tech support. You can also reach us on our information line to help you through this process. If you're in need of childcare, the Department of Education is offering a service called Learning Bridges. There are priority levels for those who will get accepted first, first responders, families who are in shelters or temporary housing, etc. But if you need childcare during the days that your child from 3K to 8th grade is learning remotely, please apply in the link that appears in the slide. And it's on a roll-in basis. You would get contacted. And the sites are typically closer to home, but they're not listed, so I can't tell you where they're specifically located. Translated supports for remote learning. If you are an English language learner and you require translation or interpretation services to access remote learning or to access just information in general from the Department of Education, please go to this link where there is a list of a whole bunch of translated supports for you and also information as to how to access additional language access services. Okay. Now, really important, if you are interested in changing from 100% remote learning to blended learning, which is when you attend school in a hybrid format for some period of time, so it could be a day or every day, depending on how the school has arranged it, you must fill out this one-time only survey between November 2nd and 15th. And I'll repeat that again. If you are right now in remote learning, 100% remote learning, and you want your child to attend school at least for a portion of the time, so blended learning, you must fill out the survey between November 2nd and 15th. The survey has not been made available to us, which is why I'm not linking it here, but it will be made available, and I will make sure that QSEC has the link so that you can fill it out if you want to change. It's important that you fill it out, though, if you want to change from remote to blended, because it looks like this is going to be the only opportunity that you will have for the entire school year. Originally, we were told that you would have quarterly opportunities. That seems to have changed. And finally, we have our COVID update page at advocatesforchildren.org. We'll move on from that. Okay, some another updates. As you know, some schools have closed because of COVID for at least 2 weeks. Generally, schools in red and orange zones have to close. And these are the hotspots, the areas where the Department of Education and the Health Department have identified that there is a risk of increased cases in COVID and a community spread. Schools in yellow zones are supposed to test for COVID weekly. To find out what your COVID-19 zone color may be, there is a website, and it's right there, is nyc.gov/COVID zone, and that is where you're going to find how your school is doing, and hopefully we'll get this crisis under control at some point. All right, so far so good? I don't see any questions so far. I will say, I am absolutely thankful for the interpreters who are working to translate in Spanish and Mandarin. Thank you so much. I do not speak Mandarin, but I speak Spanish. Si necesita interpretación en el español, por favor, oprima el botón donde dice interpretación para poder recibir información directamente en español. I'm also incredibly impressed with the ASL interpreters. Thank you so much. Let's start with the special education law. So special education comes from a number of federal laws and local regulations that enact the federal law. In passing, I'll mention these because you've probably heard about them. but if you haven't, to make you more familiar with them. The first one and the most important is the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Improvement Act, or the IDEA. The IDEA. This is the federal law that gives birth to special education that authorizes services in all 50 states and territories. There is also Section 504, which is a civil rights statute. I will explain very briefly later on, but it prohibits discrimination against anyone who has a condition or a disability that affects daily life in any agency that receives federal funding. So it's a more expansive expansive law, but it also applies, of course, to schools. And so oftentimes we see a play between the two of them. The New York City Education Law and Regulations Part 200 implements the federal law in New York State, and then the Chancellor's regulations, which are available online. Like I said, these blue parts are live links. Also gives you a little bit more of a more New York City local feel as to how some of the special education pieces may be coming into play. The New York City Department of Education Standard Operating Procedures Manual for Special Education is an incredibly useful guide because it tells you how the Department of Education is supposed to do everything, nuts and bolts, that has to do with special education. So how do you place a child? When do you place a child? How long does it take? What are the definitions of the different types of school of classrooms? It's a very useful document to have if you haven't read it. Now let's see. Okay, I have a question that I wanted to answer. And the question is, so if you don't participate in the survey in November, you will be stuck in full remote for the rest of the academic year. And the answer is yes, that is very likely. The Department of Education has changed its original announcement that they would allow for changes in between remote and blended at quarterly intervals. It now has announced that only with this survey, you will be able to make the switch from 100% remote to blended. So this survey becomes incredibly important, I'm sad to say. Now, the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Improvement Act, it's an incredibly complicated statute, but it can be very easily summarized by saying that all children with a disability have the right to a free and appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. It's what's known as FAPE. When you hear about FAPE, it is your child's entitlement to a free and appropriate public education and in the least restrictive environment. Now, each one of those words has specific meaning. So we'll go through some of that. So free means that at no point should you have to pay out of your own pocket for the services that the Department of Education is supposed to offer under the IDEA. Appropriate means that the services are tailored to a student's needs and must provide meaningful benefits. So it's not just offering services, but that the services actually provide a meaningful, measurable, and anticipated outcome. It should also allow a projection to a student's potential. So aspirational, what can my child achieve? What can this student achieve receiving appropriate services through the public system, through the Department of Education. They're intended to help the student progress. Now, it's really important to remember that FAPE means a Chevy, not a Cadillac. And what's a Chevy? It's just your basic American car. It takes you where you need to go. It is solid, but it is not the luxury of a Cadillac. So it is what you need to get from point A to point B, but you won't do it in style. It is not a broken down bicycle. When we say this, one of the things that I like to mention is that think of the Chevy and Cadillac comparison as what is needed and urgent for your child to make progress and what is a nice thing. So when you're talking about services, it's important that you say, this is what's needed for my child to make progress. This is what's appropriate for my child. At the moment you say a conditional statement such as, this is a good idea. My child would benefit from this. You're not talking about the basic requirement of an appropriate education. You're talking about the Cadillac. And I'll explain that again. If I say my child needs tutoring services to be able to make progress, that's an urgent matter. But if I say my child would benefit from tutoring services, that sounds like an extra. And an extra is not special education. Special education is what you need to make progress. And so when we speak about our children's services, please make sure to remember to speak of the urgency of matter because it is an urgent matter, okay? So far, so good? All right, let's try next slide. In the least restrictive environment. So in the least restrictive environment, you're probably very familiar with this. It means that in as much as possible, students with disabilities are going to learn with students who do not have disabilities, and the goal is inclusion. The goal is not to remove services to see how things are going to go. The goal is to try to attempt to provide supports and services to maintain a child as much as possible with typically developing kids, okay? Now, like I said earlier, all children with a disability are entitled to a free and appropriate public education. We talked about FAPE. Children today are going to mean those people who are between the ages of 5 and 21. So this is children, 5 to 21. With a disability, the federal law, the IDEA, defines disability as anyone who has a condition or a disability that may fall under one of these 13 classifications and impacts their education. So for example, the classifications of disabilities, I'll read them. Autism, deafness, deafblindness, emotional disturbance, hearing impairment, learning disability, intellectual disability, multiple disabilities, orthopedic impairment, other health impairment, speech or language impairment, traumatic brain injury, visual impairment. Now, notice that these are not diagnoses. These are general categories of possible condition or disability that may impact learning. And the child may have multiple possible classifications, but only one classification is needed to open the door to special education. And so only one classification is selected to authorize services for a child. What this means is, for example, you may have a child who's on the spectrum and who also has a hearing impairment, but the main classification will depend on what the team who creates the services, which includes you and we will talk about in a minute, feels should be the indicating classification. A classification is just to open the door. Services are supposed to be need-driven and not driven by classification, not driven by what's available, not driven by how much it costs, or if I've ever heard of it, it's driven by what a child needs, okay? So please understand these classifications as categories of services that authorize services, that allow for students to receive services, but not a defining characteristic of the special education program. I'm not sure that landed, because I can't see you. So please ask questions so that I know if you'd like me to explain this further. Otherwise, we'll go on. Okay. I'll go back if you need me to. I'm happy to. All right. Some of the supports and services available in the Department of Education through the special education system include assistive technology, which are any tool, any device that will enable a child to participate in their academic program or in other services. So what does that mean? It could mean a communication device, an iPad. It could mean an FM unit. It could mean books with big fonts or computers to use at home and in school, slanted desks, et cetera, et cetera. There's tons of assistive technology. And these are considered supports and services that could be requested for a child who requires it. Paraprofessionals or school aid for behavior, for academics, for toileting, for mobility assistance, other related services like counseling, nursing services, occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech and language therapy, and more. In addition to special education teacher supports and services, which is the assistance, a specialized assistance of a special education teacher who's going to be working in a smaller group with a child on an area where they need help. Now, remember the FAPE part, the the Chevy and not a Cadillac, you are, a child should be receiving services in the area of need. So just receiving services is not enough. They should be receiving services in the area of need. During COVID-19, there is a possibility to receive remote services, so teletherapies and the assistance of paraprofessionals remotely, and in-person services as well. If you find that your child is not really using the related services in a way that helps them make progress remotely, you can make a request for in-person services where it's available, or to explain in writing why the remote services are not working, to then bank them for a time in the future when the health crisis ends, because it will end. So far, so good. Now, the Department of Education implements the least restrictive environment, the requirement to offer services in as much as possible with children who are developing typically through this menu of services, a continuum of services. Now, the continuum of services is just what the Department of Education has listed as generally available, but please understand that services are need-driven. They're driven by your child's needs and requirements. And so if you need a part-time, for example, special education program in a community school and part-time integrated co-teaching class, that's possible. So let's start with this. So the least restrictive environment is special education with no services. Special education with supports and services, the related services, the paraprofessionals, the therapies, that's the least restrictive setting based on what your child needs, of course. More restrictive integrated co-teaching class or ICT, which is an integrated classroom that has a maximum of 25 children, 12 of whom have IEPs, two teachers collaborate in instruction, one special education, one general education. A little bit more restrictive special class in a community school, self-contained, your 12 children, one paraprofessional, one teacher, 12 to 1, 12 children, one teacher, 15 to 1, et cetera, your smaller classroom sizes. And the reason these are more restrictive is because all the children in self-contained classrooms are recommended to be in that self-contained classroom because of specific needs. I have another question. If a remote learning plan is not working well for a student, to whom can a parent write to? I will get to that in about 5 or 6 slides, so bear with me. The next more restrictive is District 75 inclusion in a community school, which is a wraparound hybrid of a general education program, but with lots of supports and services from District 75. So a child is placed in with general education peers and receives wraparound supports from a team of District 75 inclusion specialists. Oops, all right, here we go. More restrictive, excuse me, special class in a specialized school, District 75. So we're further away from a community school. We're in a smaller school, often located in a building with a community school, but this is a school that has only special education, small classroom sizes, and a higher level of structure. More restrictive, a state-approved non-public school or private school that's approved by New York State to offer special education services. And it is considered more restrictive because it takes you away from your community and it takes you away from typically developing peers. More restrictive is residential placement. So a private school where a child lives and receives services full-time. And then the most restrictive is home instruction, which is not to be confused with homeschooling. Home instruction is intended to be a temporary special education program when a child is unable to attend school because of a health or because of an emotional need. So it's not supposed to be a permanent. Of course, we're home right now. This is not remote instruction. This is a program called home instruction for children who are unable to attend a school. Okay. We're moving on. Let me take questions now. All right. I don't have any new questions. I will get to remote learning if remote learning is not working well for a student because we have a full section on that. So if you keep me honest and come back to me, if I don't answer your question, I will try to get to that. But if you have questions, this is a good time to do it. All right. how can a parent apply for an NPI or residential placement? So a non-public school, oops, sorry. I have alarms for my children. So a non-public school, to apply for one funded by the Department of Education, oftentimes this is done through the IEP itself. So an NPS recommendation, when the Department of Education authorizes it, it means that the Department of Education is saying, we don't have anything that can support your child's education within our system. So we have to go outside of the system. And it is truly done through the IEP meeting. So that's the shortest answer to your question. And it is actually the truest answer to your question. Later on, I can include additional materials on how to, or what it means to apply to an NPS, but it is done through the Department of Education. So what happens is that the IEP meeting, a recommendation for a non-public school or a deferral to the central-based support team, which is the same thing, it basically says you're going to a public school, is done. A packet is sent to the central-based support team, and they will then look for a private school from the state approved private school list, make applications for you. And those schools that are interested then will contact you to set up an interview for you to go and see if it's a match. If it's a match, if they can serve your child and you believe that they can as well, then the Department of Education will secure the placement through the IEP process again. It's a little lengthy, but when it's needed, it should be happening as well, okay? All right, good questions. Please keep them coming. Now, the way to get special education is through a very specific process. Now, it can seem a little complicated at times, but know that the steps are always the same and always predictable. So the first step is the opening of the case, a referral. And a referral can be a first-time referral, or you want something new, you want an opening of the case. And so the referral should always be done in writing, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. The evaluations typically come next, as long as there is consent. So consent is the step where you authorize the Department of Education to evaluate your child, and it's good for 3 years. So the next step is usually evaluations. We will talk about that. After the evaluations are completed, we go into IEP development and then arranging for placement and services. Now, for referral and consent, how to request an evaluation or make a referral? In writing, referrals for evaluations or requests for evaluations cannot be done orally. They don't get recorded. You have to do them in writing. It could be done in any language. It could be via email. It could be via letter, but it must be done in writing. To the principal or the school psychologist with a copy to the Committee on Special Education. Now we're saying please do it via email. It's fastest, and also you get confirmation. The link here gives you a landing page where you can search for your principal's email. And also you can email specialeducation@schools.nyc.gov, which is a good email to have for pretty much anything. So for the earlier questions, who can you write to? This is one of the places where you can write to if remote learning is not working. You can also contact 311, but again, it has to be done in writing. So 311 can give you some information as to how to make a referral, but it cannot take your referral. You have to do it in writing. Now, written consent for evaluations. If you haven't consented to evaluations, or the evaluation or the consent has expired, is more than 3 years old, the Department of Education has to seek your consent again within 10 days from your request from a referral. But watch for delays here. Things take a little longer if there is a need to get consent. Consent is always supposed to be in writing, voluntary, and informed. So no one should force you to consent if you do not wish to. You can take your consent back if you do not wish to have the Department of Education evaluate your child anymore. And the evaluations have to be completed within 60 days from your consent. And that timeline is very important. If you need help, again, specialeducation@schools.nyc.gov, 311. And one thing that we like to tell parents is that if this is your first time requesting an evaluation, include your consent to evaluate in your referral, or say in your letter how you prefer to consent. So you can write a letter saying, I am the mother of, and all the information that you need. I hereby give consent to evaluate my child for special education services. And that's consent right there. Sign it, make sure there's a date on it, and then, you know, send it to where you need to send it. Okay? So far, so good. Let's go to the next slide. Now, evaluations during the health crisis. Now, the IDEA still applies. The federal law has not been paused, changed, or halted in any way. So everything that we talked about in terms of the whole system continues. Of course, there's some hiccups, and we will talk about those later. Now, free evaluations in every single area of suspected disability. So your child is entitled to receive free FAPE, right? Free of cost evaluations in every single area where you believe that there may be a disability that needs exploration. What that means is that if you want to request an evaluation that was not originally provided by the Department of Education, you can do so in writing. For example, if you are in need of an evaluation for assistive technology, that should be conducted for free. If you need a neuropsychological because it was recommended that your child receive a neuropsychological, you make a request for that. Behavior evaluations, function of behavioral assessments that haven't been done before, you can also make a request for that evaluation. And every evaluation has to be conducted and arranged for by the Department of Education, and they have to be conducted for free within the 60 days that we talked about before. Now, it may be that you get a phone call or someone is not aware that they're supposed to do this, and they say, why don't you get yourself an evaluation on this particular condition? Your response to that should be, you should contract somebody to do that. I am entitled for my child to have a free evaluation in all areas of suspected disability. And this is written. This is written like this in the federal law. So there's no question about it. Okay. So evaluations can be conducted every 3 years, but more if requested. So if you need a child, do you need a new evaluation because you feel that something has happened and your child has made progress or failed to make progress, you can request an evaluation at any point. There are some restrictions as to how often they can conduct specific evaluations, but you can make a request and they can explain if it's appropriate or not appropriate in writing to conduct that specific evaluation. For example, someone needs to be muted, by the way. If, for example, last year you had a full set of evaluations, right? Psychoeducational evaluation, the works. And this year you think, I need another psychoeducational evaluation because something has happened and I see that there is a shift in my child's development. You can make that request. They can conduct subtests. They can conduct different evaluations. They can update other areas of the psychoeducational if need be, but you can certainly make that request and that request cannot be ignored, okay? Remote evaluations, yes. Right now, in-person evaluations are only conducted if necessary. And especially, there are some evaluations that would need in-person testing because they're tough to complete remotely. But a lot of evaluations can be done remotely. All right, okay, next one. So what's happening now? IEP meetings are being held with available information. Pre-referral interventions, so those interventions that are used before a child has a referral for special education services are being used creatively, sort of trying to implement ways to support a child differently, out of the box. What cannot be happening is that your private evaluation that's conducted remotely is rejected, that you're being told that no evaluations until school opens, or that you are asked to withdraw a request for a special education evaluation. That should not be happening at all, okay? If you're having such problems, please contact us. And again, what should an evaluation include? Tested in all areas of suspected disability, social history, psychoeducational, classroom observation, recent physical, any other areas of consent. And if your child is reaching 14 or above, a vocational assessment, okay? So far? Now, I was going to throw a poll in here, but because it's recorded, it wouldn't be fair to those who are watching afterwards. So if you have questions, this is a good time. You can unmute yourself if you want to, and I'll try to take them, or you can write them in. Okay. I don't see anyone writing anything, but feel free to write them as we go on. So let's talk about the IEP. Now, all of you, I'm sure, have heard about what the Individualized Education Program is, but I'm going to tell you a little bit more. So first, like the I says, is individualized. It's based on in-school needs. So we're talking about what does a child need to make progress in the classroom. Oftentimes, we're not considering what's going on at home, unless that spills over into the classroom. It is done by committee, which means a group of people that have multidisciplinary expertise and are supposed to collaborate and come to a consensus as to what services are required. The parent is a very important part of this committee. Actually, I would say is central to this committee. So please remember that when you go into the IEP meeting that you are the boss. During COVID-19, the meetings are taking place by phone or video conference. I've seen them during Zoom as well. If you are comfortable doing the meeting by phone, you can do so. If you prefer Zoom or another sharing platform, video conferencing platform, please make that request. The IEP is legally binding, so it's like a contract. Everything that's on the IEP is mandated. So if your child needs a service and that service does not appear on the IEP, that service does not exist and will not be provided. So please make sure that anything and everything that you believe that your child needs, even if it's having, you must have a spoon in the classroom every time you go in because this is how she knows she's okay. That goes in the IEP. You are then required to have a spoon in the classroom. If you have objections to services, you also can say, hey, I feel that this is not done right. I want it included on the IEP that I believe that this is not done properly. Okay. One of the materials that I'm including in the survey is a worksheet so that you can prepare for an IEP meeting. And all it does is just it helps you go through the process of creating an IEP before you go to the meeting so that you don't miss anything. The IEP is good for 1 year, but if one is not conducted, the last IEP remains valid. Meaning it should continue to be implemented until another one is created, even if it's obsolete, okay? But it's good for 1 year, and the phone number for special education and the contact information is here. I love the specialeducation@schools.nyc.gov because it's just easy to remember and a good central place to contact. All right, IEP meetings during COVID-19. Schools must invite you 7 calendar days prior to the IEP meeting so that you can prepare, so that you can ask for any documentation that you would need to have to participate. The invites are done via email, but if you do not have emails, they will call you. Schools have to provide you with documentation to participate in the meeting. So whatever they're going to be discussing, they should be sending you a copy. If there's an evaluation, if there's a document that was created that talks about your child and they're going to be using that at the meeting, they should be sharing that with you before the meeting. Now, if families do not have email, you can request that documentation be mailed to the parent ahead of the meeting. And remember, documentation must be in the parent's preferred language. The only exception to that is that evaluations are not often translated. They can be translated orally, but it's not often that we see translation in writing, although you could make a request for it. Okay, now who's at the meeting? You are at the meeting, invited with 7 days notice. A special education teacher who is your child's teacher or someone who knows your child should be there. A general education teacher, if the child is or may be in a general education environment, if not, then they're not required. A school psychologist who explains evaluations or change in settings. A district representative who knows and is familiar with what's available in the district. And your child, as you wish for them to participate, but oftentimes are invited after they're 15. And then anyone else you need, they can call in, including interpreters, They can call in, they can, participate in other ways by providing information ahead of time. But if you need a doctor, a service provider, if you need someone for support, if you need an advocate, they can be there. Now, about interpretations, the meeting should be interpreted, should be in the language that you are the most comfortable with. So if you're an English language learner and you speak another language, you make a request for the information, the meeting to be in your language, and an interpreter needs to be provided for you. I will make this note that please do not use your children as interpreters. The Department of Education is required to provide you with an appropriate interpreter. If you find that the interpretation is not appropriate, you can say so. The interpreter will have to interpret that too and say, look, this is not working, so that you can participate fully. Okay? All right. Now, I'm actually going to skip this one because it's an extra one that we have. So program recommendations. So after the IEP meeting, the Department of Education is required to send you some notices so that you know what's happening. The first one is called the prior written notice, which is just a notice that describes the program. So what type of classroom, what services your child is going to receive, what type of school, is it a community school, is it a District 75 school, is it a private school? So it's like a summary of what was agreed to at the IEP meeting. Now, the second one is the school location letter, which tells you what school your child is going to attend. It's not a final recommendation. It is it's more of a suggestion. So this is where we believe that your child will be able to receive the services that are listed on the IEP. You have the right to visit the school. It has the phone number, so you can contact the school and find out information about what services they offer. If you find that the services as they are going to be offered at the school are not appropriate, you have the right to reject the school in writing and request another option. All right. So at this time, you should contact via email for a school visit, even though the letter has a phone number. It's a little harder to reach people these days. Email the Department of Education staff who sent the letter and email the principal and parent coordinator. In the blue link, you will find the emails for the different New York City public schools so that you can find who you need to ask. And you can always contact us. We can help you find out. Okay, so far so good. All right. Oh, shoot. I don't know what happened there. Sorry, guys. I'm having some tech issues. All right. Questions so far? All right. So IEP meetings advocacy tips. Call us if the school refuses to conduct an IEP meeting. If the school will not recommend any services until school reopen, if you're in a closed school, or after all evaluations are completed, that should not happen. And if schools say that it cannot consider any changes to an IEP until schools reopen or new evaluations are conducted. Okay. Now, let's talk about special education during COVID. You may be familiar now with the school, with the program adaptations document or the PAD. I'll show you a sample in just a minute, but this is a document that summarizes the services on the IEP and describes how those services are going to be delivered during remote and blended instruction. Blended meaning that you are in school, live instruction at some point during the week. It does not replace or change the IEP. The IEP has not been changed. It's supposed to summarize what you're going to receive, how you're going to receive the services at home and during blended instruction. You're going to develop this document, with the teacher, with the service providers, and it can be updated and revised. So if you have a program adaptations document, the PAD, and you would like to revise it, you would like to update it because of some changes, you can. Just reach out to the teacher to make those changes. The RAD, which is the Related Services Adaptations document, is the same as the PAD. It's a summary of services on the IEP, but for those students who only receive related services. Okay, so they don't have a program, they don't have a classroom that's small classroom sized or specialized. They only have related services. If you have not received a copy of your child's PAD, or you want to modify it, speak with a teacher or principal, or email specialeducations@schools.nyc.gov or 311. Remember that teachers have daily office hours where students and parents can ask for help. Find out what those office hours may be so that then you can reach out to the teachers. English as a new language and students can still receive supports to learn English while during remote instruction, while in school or during blended learning. Those services have not been paused or canceled. They continue. Okay. Let's see if I can change this. So the program adaptation document is supposed to look at, it's supposed to have the special education teacher, the parent, and other specialists come in to input information so that you have a good solid description of what you're going to get. It should include behavioral supports at home and in schools. It should define the role of the paraprofessional. So if you have a paraprofessional, what is their function and how are they going to deliver the services in person, while in school, and remotely? What is the role of assistive technology? Not just the devices used to access remote learning, but the devices that a child with a disability may need to be able to access instruction and participate. And then the classroom program. All that should go together into the creation of the PAD. And this is what it looks like. This is a special education program adaptations document for blended and remote learning. And as you can see, it has some important information, disability classification, but it tells you how often a child is going to receive the program and counseling services, how often, the same thing as you would see on the IEP, okay? It should also explain if you're going to be receiving some of these services remotely or in person at school in a blended program. Now, going a little bit, shifting a little bit for the related services during COVID-19 for both the PAD and the RAD, you can receive related services, live related services during remote learning or blended. Providers should contact parents about scheduling, how services are going to be provided, and any changes. And you really should talk to your providers about your preference and how to get those services at home. Need help again? Talk to the principal or write to new address relatedservices@schools.nyc.gov. So if you're having a difficult time with related services, this is a good email address to send and you can always contact us, we can help. All right, now blended learning, which is that partial learning in school and at home, for most districts in New York City, in-person instruction is going to be between 1 and 3 days per week. So children will be attending school between 1 and 3 days per week. But for District 75 schools, which are the highly specialized, all special education schools, you're going to have in-person instruction between 1 and 3 days per week, or in-person instruction 5 days a week, every 2 weeks, or in-person instruction every day for those who need it. So it varies a little bit, but certainly is more intense in District 75. Every school will choose its own model. That's a complication, of course. But the short thing is that then you can contact your school and see what is the model that they're following. And if you need additional in-person instruction, how you can then increase those days, increase those times. You can always reach out to us. Sometimes the answer is not really clear for us, but we can try to support you in finding the best outcome possible at this time. Now, special education during blended learning can be a little bit, it's new. So it can be a little confusing for students who are programmed to be in an integrated co-teaching classroom, the ICT. You should have in-person live instruction with two teachers, special education and general education, and remotely blended remote teachers. So somebody who may not necessarily be your in-person instructor, your in-person teachers, co-planning with the in-person teacher to provide a combination of synchronous, that's live, or asynchronous recorded instruction. So synchronous means that there is a live person like I am right now, explaining information. And asynchronous is after this is recorded. When you're watching this, that's asynchronous instruction. It's recorded instruction. So important to remember that in this one is that you are going to get your two teachers in person in the classroom, but you may get somebody else remotely. Now, you should ask for the qualifications of the blended teacher, and you should keep track of the amount of live instruction on remote days, okay? The big complaint that we've had with parents is that they're saying there's too much asynchronous recorded instruction and not enough synchronous live instruction on remote days. So keep track of that. Special education teacher support services or SETS. The schedule should combine both remote and in-person SETS, and the SETS provider will arrange for the scheduling remotely and in-person. Of course, you will find out about the remote part, but if you haven't heard from your SETS provider about remote instruction, you really should contact them to set it up. Okay. If you are recommended for a special education classroom, a small class size, you should have a special education teacher in person and remotely. The classroom size should be the same as what's listed on the IEP, in person and remotely. What this means is that if you're recommended for a 12-to-1 classroom, you should have less than 12 children in person, or 12 children or less, excuse me, in person, and 12 children or less remotely. So the classroom size should not grow remotely. You should notice how many students are in the remote classroom. And if you find that it is more than what's listed on the IEP, that's a violation of your child's IEP, okay? Remotely, you're going to get synchronous and asynchronous activities. If you have a classroom paraprofessional, that classroom paraprofessional can support remotely as directed by the teacher. So it really is the teacher who directs the classroom paraprofessional for supports. If the paraprofessional is the only person teaching on remote days, please notice and report it. You really need to have live teacher instruction or asynchronous teacher instruction, okay? All right, so reason we say this. Special education during blended learning, paraprofessionals, the one-on-one student aides. On remote days, the paraprofessional's role has to be discussed when creating the pad. So what is it that the paraprofessional is going to be doing while remote? What is their function? Is it assisting you and the child with accessing remote learning? Is it consulting with you on how to support your child at home? Is it assisting you to reinforce a behavior plan, or to support the child during instruction-related services? What is their function? The clearer you have that written out and spelled out on the pad, the easier it would be to have that implemented and for the paraprofessional to have that instruction, okay? All right, now during all remote, so we're switching from blended and now we're going to 100% remote. How is instruction supposed to be offered? For ICT or integrated co-teaching, you're going to have a co-teaching pair. So two instructors who are teachers, at least one of them has to be a special education teacher, are going to be co-teaching with synchronous live and asynchronous learning activities. Yeah, I'm going to do that in a minute, I promise. And then special education classroom, you are going again, synchronous or asynchronous learning. Classroom paraprofessional may teach individual or small group as directed by the teacher, and you should track live instruction by special education teacher, all right? Now, I had a question I want to pick up, and that is, could you repeat what parents need to do in order to change from remote to blended instruction? What form needs to be filled out? So I don't have the form to provide to you right now. I haven't received it, but what I can tell you is that the Department of Education has said that between November 2nd and November 15th, if parents want to change from 100% remote to blended, this is going to be your single time to do it this year and this school year. So there will be a survey that's going to be sent, a form that's going to be sent, and I will share it with CUSAC once we receive it so that it can be sent to everyone who participated here. You fill out the form, you explain that you would like to go blended from remote, and that's it. And suppose, you know, make sure it is received. We've had some problems with things not getting to where they need to be, but this is your only opportunity. It appears that it will be your only opportunity this school year to change from remote to blended. Now, remember also, you can change from blended instruction to remote learning at any given point. You don't have to wait. But to switch from remote to in-school learning part-time, as the school determines, this is your only chance. So I'll repeat that again. From November 2nd through November 15th, there will be a survey or a form that parents can fill out and express their interest to switch from remote learning to blended instruction. I hope that covered it. Please keep the questions coming. Hold on. All right. Special education during all remote learning. Paraprofessional, similar to remote days for blended learning, so similar to what I explained before, and the role, their function is going to be described in the PAD. For related services and sets, the provider will contact you to determine how services are going to be delivered, so live, videos, activity packets, etc., and to schedule. Now, you should tell the provider if live services is necessary, so your child doesn't do well with related services or sets recorded, then just explain that. And you should track live services by the related service provider. Okay. Now, how to complain. Concerns with special education during remote and blended learning. Start with the school. Go to the principal. Go to the school psychologist. I always suggest emailing because you have a confirmation and you have it in writing. After if things don't work out with the school, you don't get the solution that you're looking for, then you move up to the borough office, to the administrator of special education, and then finally to the Department of Education Central that emails specialeducationschools.nyc.gov or call 311. You can always call us. The piece that is central to this is that you really have to start with these layers, because if you go straight to the Department of Education Central, you're going to get asked, oh, did you ask, did you go to the borough office? Did you complain at the school? And if the answer is no, they're going to tell you, okay, go back down and start from there. So it really has to be done in this layered way, unless of course you call us, in which case we'll try to figure out what's the easiest and fastest way to get to what you need to do. All right. And again, this is the address down here for to find the principal and the administrator of special education emails. Oopsie. Sorry. You can contact the Department of Education Special Education Office, bsspecialeducationatschools.nyc.gov. Remember that other email address, relatedservices@schools.nyc.gov. But contact them if there is no response to a referral, if evaluations are not conducted, if the evaluations were not appropriate for a student, so you feel that they were not done appropriately, you needed them live and they were done remotely, if the IEP meeting is not scheduled, if you did not receive documents to participate in the IEP meeting, if the IEP or the PAD or the RAD are not being implemented, or if you didn't get a copy of the PAD or the RAD or the IEP. So these are things that you can just skip the line and go all the way up. Okay. And then issues with related services. These are the emails, relatedservices@schools.nyc.gov. I think that answers the earlier question about, let me just make sure I got it properly, have the information. Yeah, so if remote learning is not working well for a student, to whom can a parent write to? So this is, you know, start with the principal, move from the school, move up. But these are some emails that you can copy in your concerns. I find that copying the Department of Education has a faster response rate. So issues with transition to kindergarten, turning 5 at schools.nyc.gov, issues with special education services at charter school, email the CSE chairperson. And you'll see the addresses in that link, okay? Language access rights, translation and interpretation. Arabic, Bengali, Chinese, French, Haitian, Creole, Korean, Russian, Spanish, Urdu. There are translation available already for letters, forms, meeting notices, report cards, and special education documents. If you don't have them, make a request, again, in writing for a translation of materials that would allow you to participate fully. We especially ask that parents make a request for translations of their IEPs. So you can read them, you can follow through with them, and you can track services. Interpretation, you should have interpretation provided for free by the Department of Education at parent-teacher conferences, at parent association meetings, at suspension hearings, at meetings with school staff, and certainly at special education meetings. Again, please do not use your children for interpretation. Department of Education's language access complaints, hello@schools.nyc.gov, or you can call the number that's listed here. Now, for special education formal dispute resolutions, there are a number of things that you can do, but the main ones are mediation and an impartial hearing. So for mediation is a voluntary meeting where the parent and the Department of Education discuss a problem and a mediator facilitates. You and the Department of Education control the outcome because you're going to try to resolve the meeting by agreeing to certain steps or certain actions. And you can always go to an impartial hearing afterwards. So for example, you're not getting sufficient remote learning, live remote learning for a child who really requires it. You may request a mediation and say, you know, the IEP recommends 5 hours of speech and language services or 5 sessions of speech and language services every week. I'm getting 3 remotely and it's not working. I need all 5 to be live when my child's in school. Let's figure this out. You go to mediation, you figure out what works for you right now, or off, you know, resolved to agree to something in particular, you get into an agreement. That agreement is binding and it solves the problem. Great. If it doesn't solve the problem, you can always go to an impartial hearing. Okay. Now, an impartial hearing is a legal proceeding. It's like going to trial, but it's inside the Department of Education. It is rather informal. It's an administrative hearing. An impartial hearing officer is in charge. This is a person who is trained in special education and disability law. It is, most of the time, is actually 100% of the time an attorney. And that person acts as a fact finder, a judge. That person issues a written decision based on your witnesses, the Department of Education's witnesses, the documents that are provided inside the hearing. The Department of Education has the burden of showing that they did what they were required to do. So the burden is on the Department of Education to say, to prove that they did what they were required to do. And if you don't like the decision, you can always appeal it as well. Okay. Now, some final notes. We're getting to the final part of our presentation. We're on the final stretch. So new placements are still an option. So if your child requires a different type of program, a different type of classroom, new placements are still an option. They're not shut down because of COVID. Logically, just think about all the kindergartners coming into kindergarten. Those are all new placements. So logically thinking, those are still an option. If you're switching schools, the Department of Education will send a school location letter. Use that information in that school location letter to find out what's available and how services are going to be offered at that new school. The new school will reach out to you with a contact number. And of course, you can't visit the school right now, but you can talk to staff there. You can ask tons of questions. It's useful to have the IEP nearby so that you can ask questions and say, my IEP says this. Can you do this? How can you do this? Who will do this? And then you can start sifting to see whether or not the placement will be appropriate for your child. And now, during COVID, pay attention to timelines. So if you have made a request for an evaluation, please make sure that you put on your calendar those 60 school days when those evaluations are going to be completed. Keep a list of your contacts, people you've spoken with and what they've said. Make sure to ask and keep copies of the IEP and, oh, I'm sorry, that's not supposed to be RLP, that's Related Learning Plan. That's supposed to be a PAD, your PAD. Track the services your child actually gets. I cannot overstate the importance of keeping track of the live instruction your child is getting and how many hours of services they're getting at home. And then reach out to the Department of Education for help. We've seen them do work to try to correct mistakes. You can always reach out to us and we can, you know, support you in that as well. All right. Wrapping up, some reminders. If you need help, ask. We are open. we are available. We have our helpline, but also you can email us at our information line, info@advocatesforchildren.org. We'll try to get back to you. And check for updates on our website. We update this link for new updates very frequently. And if you have questions, please enter them in the chat as we finish. Later, you will receive a copy of this presentation. And when you do, this is a survey for how we did today. And the carrot in the survey is that all the materials that we are, that I wish for you to have, the special education guide, the worksheet to prepare for a special education meeting, information about evaluations, are going to be linked in the survey. But here's another thing. You can always go to our website. All that information is up there as well. I think that's all I have for you. So please ask your questions. I'll be hanging out and Joseph will finish recording whenever he feels that that's necessary. For those of you who are watching the recording, thank you for staying with us and please contact us with any questions. Now, for those of you who are here, any thoughts, questions? For the person who asked the earlier question, let me know if I did not answer your question, and I'll be happy to revisit it. All right.
Okay.
Joseph, I'm going to stop recording now.
Yep.
And